All right, friends, Greg Kuchel, your host here. This is a weird situation, friends, because now I'm broadcasting from home, and I think the last couple of weeks, last week certainly, I broadcast from the studio. And when I'm in the studio, I can hear the music coming up. I can hear the rooster. And it's so nice to get that cue and to rock and roll underneath the with the bed of music underneath me, and I feel like a real talk show host coming in. But when I'm at home, I don't have that feed. I've just got nothing. And then Derek, who I can see, pointing his finger at me, but I was distracted for a minute. And I looked up, and there he is waving his finger like crazy. So I'm probably way behind the rooster today. Anyway, thank you for joining me and being part of the show here. And this is actually my last live broadcast before the end of the year. Now, the next few weeks, I'll be taking broadcast time off, but we will be putting something in there. Some things are Derek and Amy have arranged so that you'll get something each week, Christmas week and New Year's week, those 2 weeks before the end of the year. And then we'll start up again in January. But this is my last hurrah, so to speak, at the end of the year. And that means there's a couple of things that I want to talk with you about, some fun things, but some business things. And here's one that's really important. I have rarely mentioned anything about the fact that Standard Reason is a partner-supported organization. And the show here is a listener-supported enterprise. That means those people who benefit from listening to the podcast, to the radio show, as the case may be, respond with gifts to us so we can keep doing what we do. And it's not just, of course, the podcast. It isn't like we have a podcast fund. It's we have an organization that does lots of things and has lots of expenses and has lots of people helping us do all of these things. And so it all kind of goes usually into the same pot. And then we pay our bills. I got so wound up there, I started banging my mic around. I'm animated here with my hands. We pay our bills just like everyone else, but we can only pay our bills because we have faithful partners. Now, many of you are fabulous strategic partners, and those are folks who give every single month and a certain amount, and that is really the foundation of what we do. But this is the end of the year, and a lot of you, even strategic partners, will give something special at the end of the year. For some of you, it's the time when you give to special things like this, as opposed to, say, weekly with your church or monthly with your church, however. and sometimes just another way of saying, hey, extra thanks. And just had a session of check writing myself here in the Kuchel home where, I send an extra check to Life Training Institute, Scott Klusendorf's organization, which we support on a monthly basis. But then I thought, all right, we've got something else to work with. We want to say an extra blessing. Here you go, Scott. Merry Christmas kind of thing. And then there's other organizations that we just write a check at the end of the year, larger than a monthly gift, but it's just kind of an end of year gift. So I know I'm talking to people that are in all those categories. I'm also talking to people who haven't given at all. You've benefited from the show, which is fine, and we don't begrudge you that at all. We have a philosophy or Standard Reason. We always ask, I should say, we always give first and gladly and liberally and continually before we ever ask anyone to give back to us, before we ask to receive from you. But it is appropriate in light of that for us to ask for that. So if you've been served by us at STR through our radio show or through our blogs or our video clips or our web resources or our public events or Solid Ground newsletters or our mentoring letters, all of which come at no cost, I want to encourage you to think about sending a gift in response this December, so before the 31st. And if you've received generous value and you're able to give generously, then we ask you to do that as well. And you can do that online. Go to str.org. You can write a check and send it to our address, which is also at str.org. You get monthly mailings that come in, many of you, and there are emails that come out. We have an email strategy and stream. And so you're hearing from us here and there, and every time you hear, we try to make it easy for you to give us money. It's one of my rules. Always make it easy for people to give you money. Incidentally, you may have that if you're in business, because it's one of the most important business rules that gets overlooked a lot. But we want to make it easy for you to say thank you to us at the end of the year. And also to let you know that there's a challenge out there. That is, we have a group of very generous partners that have aggregated a challenge of $225,000, and that is their giving total. And they've already committed this. That's what they're giving, and they're saying, okay, that's our challenge to the rest. And I think there's about 40 people in that group. This is our challenge to the rest to match or exceed that goal before December 31st. And so that's the challenge I'm putting out there for you, because we actually need your help. We're not sinking. God's been good to us this difficult year, but this is the month where 25% of our income comes in. So because of that, this is the month, and just about the only month I ever bring this issue up. I'm asking you, on behalf of our team, to send a generous gift to Stand to Reason and say thank you by doing so for sending for us helping you. And you're also not only ensuring that we're going to be able to help you in the future, but through us, you can help so many others. And by the way, if you give a gift of $60 or more, let me see the details here, then I'm going to send you a gift. And that is, I'll send you the brand new Story of Reality video study. Actually, the video study is not brand new, but the workbook is. And the workbook is personally signed by me. I was in the office last week banging out signatures by the hour so that you could have a signed copy as a result of giving us a gift of $60. So what you're going to get is the Story of Reality study guide and the 6-session video DVD set, I guess is what it is, and all that for your gift of $60 or more. I think at $25, you get the guide. At $60, you get the rest. But it's just a simple way of us encouraging you, trying to mentor you through that material and say thanks for your kindness. All right. So that's the pressing issue here at the top of the hour. Now, we had our Christmas staff meeting today, which I think was, well, I mean, you can imagine, we're all sheltering at home, right? And I mean, this is California, we're really locked down here. So, I mean, you can't even have people over for Christmas. You're not supposed to meet at church. I mean, there's no dining even outside. Fortunately, we can go get takeout. You know, if you kind of hold your breath when you go in the restaurant and grab the bag, it's just ridiculous here. But this means that we have staff meetings virtually. So we decided we're going to have a Christmas party anyway. And, our team leaders arrange for us to have, gift certificates for food so we can get food in advance and we can kind of all be eating in front of our computers. But we played this white elephant game, and this is a variation. And I'm just telling you this because of my choice for white elephant gifts. I thought you might be interested. I never know what to do in a thing like that. Oh, by the way it worked here is you go to Amazon, you find something that would be a good white elephant gift, and then you take a picture of it, you know, print it out, whatever, and then you kind of hold it up to the screen and your camera so everybody can see when they choose you, here's what they get. You know how that game works, and then you can steal from each other, and it moves back and forth, and finally the dust settles, and you're stuck with whatever you got in the white elephant gift. But and then of course when it's all over, then you go to Amazon and have Amazon mail whatever a screwy gift you gave to somebody else. Now, I didn't know what to do about this, and I'm always a little bit nervous about, I don't know, what do I choose? You know, it's bad enough regular gifts, white elephant gifts from Amazon. So I decided to enlist my daughter. Now, my daughter's almost 16 years old, and she's very artistic. She loves to draw, and she does a lot of pen drawing. And she's also a Van Gogh not aficionado, but a fan of sorts. And so she's done some Van Gogh stuff with her drawing, et cetera. And so I thought, first of all, I thought she's a little on the odd side. She can think of a really good gift, and she was thrilled to be able to give me a suggestion. But given her predilection for drawing and for Van Gogh, given that you draw with pencil, you need an eraser. So what she actually owns is a Van Gogh ear eraser. You can get them. It's an eraser shaped like an ear, and it's Van Gogh, supposedly. And if you don't know, Van Gogh was a painter who cut his ear off. I mean, he was weird. In any event, he's a great painter. And so here's one you could get. Now, the list is like the limit is $15. Well, it was only about $7. But I noticed right next to it, you could also get for another $7 a pencil sharpener that was shaped like a nose. Now, where do you think you would insert the pencil to sharpen it? If your pencil sharpener is shaped like a nose, yeah, you got that right. And that's what I added to the gift. So now you have an eraser and a pencil sharpener, both shaped like parts of a human body for your drawing and writing pleasure. That was my gift. So it was a big hit in one regard. It wasn't a hit in that anybody wanted it. Nobody wanted that. Somebody got stuck with it. But it was a big hit when they saw it because it's kind of funny. First the ear and then the pencil sharpener with, well, you can figure it out, with the pencil in the nose. So that was our Christmas. There was more there to our party. But one of the things I was asked to do is just offer a reflection here at the end of the year for the team. And I realized that there were a couple of things that were foremost in my mind that were competing with each other. So when I'm looking back at 2020, two different things are coming to mind for me. All right. And the reason I mention this is I have a suspicion that a lot of you have something similar going on. And I have a reflection of application regarding these things that I want to offer you at the end. But here's the first thing. This has been a really weird year, all right? The COVID thing started very, very early on. I think it was December when it broke out in Wuhan and then became a national issue in January. And by February, people were freaking out here in the States. And by March, we were getting locked down big time. All right. And that created all kinds of craziness and continues to do so. I was writing my mentoring letter, just finished it yesterday, for February. And I'm trying to anticipate in my mind as I'm giving exhortation or counsel in the mentoring letter that many of you receive. And by the way, if you don't receive the mentoring letter or the semi or bi-monthly article I send out called Solid Ground, you need to do that. That's our free training material every month. You get an article, 3,000, 3,500 words, January, and subsequent every other month. And alternating months, you get a one-page mentoring letter. This is a way that I can mentor you and encourage you and build you up. If you just listen to the show and you don't get that, I really encourage you to go to str.org and sign up. Solid Ground, mentoring letter, okay? That's just very, very basic stuff. It's the way I can have another type of ongoing input into your life because it's my desire to mentor and disciple you to be a better and more effective ambassador for Christ, okay? So here I am writing, 6 weeks ahead, trying to anticipate what's going to be the case in February, for goodness sake. And I imagine a lot of the turmoil that we had in 2020 is going to be still in play in February. And we had I'm trying to think of the best adjective to describe it. Maybe vicious is the best one. Vicious political campaigns in the history of our country. And the wounds are still open, obviously. And the fight is still going on, and this creates an atmosphere of hostility across the board, both public and private. We've had terrible things that have happened, killings that have resulted in riots and destruction of cities, portions of cities, major cities around the country. Some of it still going on, somewhat unabated, certainly not checked by the local authorities in some cases. I mean, this is a lot. That's a bummer. Our individual lives have been upset. Just the fact that many of you are sheltering at home. Many of you are stuck at home because you don't have work at all. What, 30 million people have lost their jobs? 17% of all the restaurants in the country have closed down permanently as a result of what's going on. So all to say, there's a lot of frustration that I feel about this last year. Now, I'll tell you something about myself just to be totally candid, that I'm not particularly proud of and I have to work on it, but I'm not exactly a happy-go-lucky person. I'm a little on the intense side, and if something bugs me, I talk about it. That makes me a bit of a complainer. Not a good thing. Not giving them heaven, is it? And so I have to be vigilant that I'm not a grumbler or a complainer. But I'll tell you what, if I can keep my mouth shut, that doesn't mean it's not going on inside. It just means that I'm not causing other people annoyance because I'm trying to manage my own mouth. And so there's this huge part of me that is really frustrated about this last year, about the challenges, about the disappointments, about the difficulties, about the hardships. Yet I told my team that this afternoon there's something else going on as well. And that is, I look at my team and I look at the 18 people we have at Stand to Reason. And I see how the team aggressively pivoted there in March when we had to change everything. And how they really came together and they worked really hard. And we had some casualties with realities. We lost Orange County. That's our biggest one. We had 2,600 young people, youth leaders there last year. This year, none. They had to close it down. We lost Dallas coming up in the spring. And earlier in the year, you know, we lost Birmingham. But we were able to maintain Minneapolis and we were able to open in Seattle. So those are good things. In other words, in the midst of all this challenge and difficulty, we had people that in our team that really rose to the occasion. And we launched a new website and we launched Stand to Reason University, which we already have a bunch of people that have gone through all the courses that we have so far, which is three. And we're planning two every quarter next year, two new ones. So that's a huge thing. We have Red Pen Logic that's been going crazy and wild on YouTube. Check that out if you haven't checked it out. All these good things happening. But I know, and this encourages me to see this, hardship, pain, frustration, oh my goodness, what next kind of crazy things happening in 2020. The same time, there is a core of faithful, productive activity making an eternal difference. However, I know that even in my team, that even though we're adapting to the hardships that are challenges for Stand to Reason, like you are in your professional life, in your private lives, there still are other challenges. I think it was Spurgeon who said that for anybody who's being used of God in a significant way and in a visible way, in other words, people see, oh, there's somebody God's using. Wow, that's great. They must be doing swell, fabulous, used of God, kingdom power, all that stuff. Well, that is true. However, what they don't know, and this is Spurgeon's observation, that almost every one of those people is carrying a cross that no one sees. Spurgeon suffered with depression all his life. Spurgeon had a very, very sick wife he had to attend to. We think of the great crowds that followed him, the great impact that he had, but there was this secret cross that he carried his entire life. makes me think of this passage in 2 Corinthians. We have this treasure in earthen vessels. That's us. The treasure is the glory of Christ, glory of God in the face of Christ, 2 Corinthians 4. We have this treasure in earthen vessels. That's us, right? So that the surpassing greatness of the power might be from God and not from man. And so even though I'm aware of the standard reasons, organizational, effective, vigorous, productive response in the midst of these external hardships, which I'm sure there are many of you that are listening that can relate to that. Okay, hardship, frustrating, grumbling. Okay, let's just do it. Let's step up. Let's get the job done. Let's do what we can do. Let's pivot. Let's make the best of the circumstances. Let's just keep soldiering on. Good for you. Yet that on the inside, there's other things going on. In the private world, there are other things that are going on, and not everybody can see that in your life. And you don't have the freedom necessarily to speak about these things very much, maybe some close friends, but there's that cross you bear. So I thought in light of that, I'd read something to you that is something I've read before. It came from the LA Times, believe it or not, on the editorial page. Nothing like this would ever appear there now. This is 2003. This is 17 years ago. Andrew Clavin is the author. The title is Eternity Is Now. Just Ask Scrooge and George Bailey. And what he's making reference to, of course, is the two films that for many people stand out most at Christmas time, the somewhat timeless Christmas Carol made in multiple versions. I like the Alistair Sim one from 52 best, but we have four different versions in our home DVD. And then you have George Bailey, of course, from It's a Wonderful Life. And something that early 50s released, and not to much fanfare. It wasn't until later that it became a classic, really. I mean, I guess all classics become classics later. That's what it means to be a classic. But lots of things get forgotten, and this didn't. It gained more momentum as time went on. But there's something interesting about those two characters. So I just want to read this piece, or at least a portion of it, to help maybe, and I like reading it, to put things into perspective for me and maybe put things into perspective for you a little bit as we both look back on a crazy year in which crazy things happen. And in many cases, we were able to rise to the occasion. But even so, there are other things that we struggle with secretly. All right. So that's the backdrop here. Right. Here's what he writes. To my mind, there are only two truly great Christmas movies. Scrooge, and he's referring now to the title of the 1951 adaptation of Dickens's A Christmas Carol, and that one stars Alistair Sim and Frank. And then also Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life, starring James Stewart. He says, the first I watch every year. I think A Christmas Carol is one of the greatest pieces of wisdom literature the West has produced, and lover of Dickens though I am, I heretically believe this film version improves the original. It takes the story a little bit more seriously, adding more humanity to the satire and producing more real emotion. He's talking about the film as opposed to the book itself or the novella. The Capra picture isn't quite as durable for me, he writes. After half a dozen viewings, I can still watch it with pleasure. And I feel like I got to wait every couple of years to see it again. I know it almost word for word. Personally, I've seen it so many times. But then he says, one thing that's always struck me about these two films is they're essentially mirror images of each other. In Scrooge, a man grown rich because of heart-shriveling greed, is forced by spirits to view the consequences of his existence. In It's a Wonderful Life, George Bailey, a man in financial trouble because of his large-souled generosity, is forced by an angel to view the consequences of his non-existence, what would have happened if he'd never been born. On both sides of the mirror, the results are the same, a revolutionary personal transformation, what the New Testament calls metanoia, which is often translated as repentance, but which literally means a change of mind. This is in the article, LA Times, believe it or not, 2003. Right? I continue. After the metanoia, there's a lot of Christmas caroling and happiness and that sort of thing. Thus, movie critics who frequently confuse darkness with depth sometimes belittle these films as sentimental. Well, they're wrong. Watched carefully, the films are disturbingly realistic. Because for each protagonist, the change in outlook has absolutely nothing to do with a change in circumstance. Did you catch that? I'm going to read it again. In each case, for each protagonist, the change in outlook has absolutely nothing to do with a change in circumstance. They aren't singing carols and so forth because they've won the girl or beaten the villain or made millions or righted wrongs. Scrooge can never bring justice to the people he's ruined, and Bailey will never become the world-traveling architect he wanted to be. And yet, in the aftermath of their visions, both men are joyous. "I don't deserve to be so happy," Scrooge mutters. "But I can't help it." And Bailey lets out a heartfelt "Yay!" when the angel returns him to the dreary town that had been the graveyard of his ambitions. He has more to say here, but I just want to read the last couple paragraphs. He closes the thought. Scrooge and Bailey, in traveling through misery to see the eternal born in time, are descendants of those wise men who traveled through the wilderness to see God born into history. To such a vision, amid failure and sin, and even in the face of death, there is only one response. Yay. Andrew Clavin. I don't even know if he's still alive, but that's a wonderful reflection. No change of circumstance. Change in perspective. In the midst of all the gloom and doom and hardship and challenging circumstances, there is something glorious. And that's where our hearts need to be at the end of this year. All right, let's take a quick break. Greg Kokel here. Stand to Reason. Stay with us.
Have you seen our brand new website? Stop by str.org and enjoy a fresh, clean layout with all the same great content. The new Stand to Reason website was designed with you in mind. It has an easier-than-ever navigation and a crisp, simple layout so you can find all the sound analysis and careful commentary that you've come to expect from us. Browse new features that make finding your favorite resources easier than ever. As always, it's our goal to equip you, our fellow Christians, with the confidence, clear thinking, and courage you need for every encounter you have as a Christian ambassador. Our new website is just one way we're fulfilling that goal, allowing you to access the resources you need in a new and improved way. So visit str.org and keep coming back to discover new podcasts, articles, and videos each and every day.
You can take Stand to Reason with you through our mobile apps, available for free from the App Store or the Google Play Store. The Quick Reference app gives you short, easily accessible courses on our most popular topics like tactics, homosexuality in the Bible, morality, the story of reality, and many more. The Stand to Reason app has all our latest content available at your fingertips. You can listen to our podcasts, check the blog, and access timely and practical resources. They're free, so download the apps today on the App Store or the Google Play Store and start carrying Stand to Reason with you everywhere you go. If you enjoy our apps, you can help other people find them by rating them on the App Store or the Google Play Store.
Back at you. Greg Kukul. Same thing as last segment. I'm looking at my stuff here and I'm missing the man waving his hand at me. Okay, back at you here. Just a quick update that there are two things that we are looking for at Stand to Reason. One of them is a new social media coordinator, someone to be responsible for our planning and implementation and monitoring of STR's content on social media channels, all that kind of stuff. You have to have an STR mindset. That's what we're looking for. Somebody who knows something about us, been kind of somewhat part of our clan, so to speak. Good proven work experience as a social media coordinator and live in the Southern California area. So if you want more information about that, just go to str.org/hiring, str.org/hiring. The second thing is that we are looking now for a new location for our final location or area that we're opening up for reality. We have the South now. We've got Central South in the Dallas area. That'll all be happening in the next year, in 2022 in Dallas, but we'll be starting our reality season in the fall of 21. We have Southern California, of course. We have Seattle. We have Minneapolis. We need somebody in New England or environs. So the Northeast, New England down to D.C. area, something like that. So we're looking for a new location for that particular conference. If you attend or work at a large church that's interested in hosting a reality in that area, please email donyell@str.org. That's D-A-W-N, like dawn, like morning, dawn, I-E-L-L-E, donyell@str.org. Okay, time to get to the calls. I'm still chuckling. I don't know. Wonder how long that Derek was waving at me, trying to get my attention there on the screen while I was taking notes here. Let's go to Sacramento and Matt. Welcome to Stand to Reason, Matt.
Hey, great. Everybody? Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure, glad to do so. What's
up? Since you mentioned earlier, we're strategic partners, giving a modest amount, but we definitely have benefited from your ministry and been a regular listener for a few years.
Matt,
now. I just really appreciate all of the content you guys put out.
You're so welcome. I'm thrilled to hear that. We have lots of what we call bricks. It takes a lot of bricks to make a building, and you're one of them. Thank you. And thank you. Are you married?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank your wife for me as well. You did say we, so I presume that, but I wasn't sure.
Sure will. Anyway, just for some quick background or context, most of the content I've found, I haven't had a chance to read very many books on the subject, but most of the things I've been able to read or see online for Christian responses to transgenderism seem to be mostly about adults and maybe about some teenagers. And a lot of it seems to be tailored to people that are likely not related to you. It's like maybe workplace or school sort of context advice. So my question is, what's an appropriate Christian response to a family member who identifies as a Christian, and they're asking you to use male pronouns in a new male name for their biological girl who just turned 5? And additionally, they're threatening that we will not be able to see them if we do not affirm this truth about the family and comply with these requests.
Yeah. Well, when you ask about a Christian response, what I think of is the kind of twofold nature of Jesus in the incarnation. We read about this in John chapter 1, and it talks about Jesus being full of grace and truth. Full of grace and truth. Both of them are really important. And sometimes as Christians, we focus more on one than the other. We're so into the being gracious to people that we don't want to ever say anything that would ever annoy them or bother them or cause them to be bugged at us. On the other side of the spectrum is that we are so committed to the truth that we don't care what anybody says or thinks. We're just going to lay it on them, kind of thing. And those are the extremes. And I think the mean, the middle, is a place for us to be, where we can balance these things out. I have sometimes said Christians are often either too naughty or too nice. You know, they're overwhelming or overbearing in their way they communicate the truth. But on the other hand, they can just be too nice in a way that does not help the person that they're talking with. And there's lots of applications of that, but it certainly applies here. So in this particular situation, you're identifying somebody who is a family member and who claims to be a Christian. Is that correct? Or these are the parents of the child?
Yeah, the parents.
And the parents who claim to be Christians, they are requesting that you treat their daughter like a son.
Yes.
And make reference to the daughter as if the daughter was a boy, and therefore use the name and the pronouns, if I'm understanding this correctly.
Yes. Yeah, you've got it exactly right.
Okay. So, by the way, pronouns are third person, reference. So I don't call you he. I call you Matt. But if I'm talking to Derek, is he still on the line? I'm making reference to you as a third person. So you're not involved in my – you're not personally involved in my use of the third person pronouns that are gender specific. Are you with me?
Yes.
Now, I think that's important, because what I want to say here is the way in general that we have – recommended people pursue this is to use the name that the individual wants to be called by. And because there are all kinds of names that many of them are, some are male, some are female, some are both. Okay. And it just seems to me people can choose whatever name they want to describe themselves. There's a song, Johnny Cash song called A Boy Named Sue. I don't know if you've ever heard that song. Okay.
Yeah, sure,
but if people want to call themselves, my daughter has a female friend who is transgendered and wants to be called Mikey. Okay. Now I refer to Mikey as Mikey. And the reason that we use the name is because the alternative would not make a, like, that's not your real name, what's your female name kind of thing. The alternative would not make any substantive difference, and it only would seem to be mean-spirited, okay? I mean, I have a resistance to wanting to cooperate broadly with this project because I think it's dangerous to the people involved. And I'll get to that in a moment. But when it comes to this particular part, what name do we use? I think this is a case where it would be appropriate to call people by whatever name they want to call themselves by. Okay? And that's all right. However, if I'm going to make reference to this person with a third party, and let me back up for a minute. The reason I say that is if I didn't do that, and I keep telling the person who wants to be called one thing, I call that person a different thing. That is just such an aggressive poke in the eye to that individual. It will simply feel mean-spirited, period. Just flat out mean-spirited and arguably insensitive to that individual. And I think that would be a good point. So we don't want to be insensitive in an inappropriate fashion. However, when it comes to pronouns, now we're not talking to the individual who's suffering from, and I mean, I'm choosing my words carefully, who is suffering from gender dysphoria. It's a suffering. It's a problem. It's not a good thing. It's a confusion because their bodies are telling them one thing and their minds are telling them another, and this means they are split down the middle. They are not whole. And the reason they're not whole is because their bodies are a specific gender, and that is a matter of fact. And there is no such thing as a gender change operation because gender is in every cell of the body. Okay.
Yeah.
So, so that this is an injured individual who needs help, not encouragement to get to continue the injury, in my view. Now, you know, there's a whole political element that is going in the absolute opposite direction. And this is one of those things where bad is called good and good is called bad. And healthy is called unhealthy, and unhealthy is called healthy. It is completely topsy-turvy, okay? So I personally think there's a spiritual dimension in this confusion in our culture, okay? I'll just let that lie for the moment. But so I think using the name is just being gracious. That's the grace part, okay? But when it comes to the broader characterization, for me to be forced by other people to affirm a gender this person does not have by demanding that I say she instead of he or he instead of she, then I think it's gone too far. And now it's become an insensitivity to somebody like me who has a different set of convictions about this. And I am not acting in a way as to be insensitive to that individual. It's just, in this case, probably the parents that are demanding that I buy into their view of this, and that's taking it too far, okay? So, and this is where I think truth comes in. If we're talking about a Christian response, I do not think that Jesus would go along with this whole program. I don't think. I know he would not, because he is the one who said from the beginning, male, female, the two become one flesh, etc. He's identified this, Matthew 19. And if you have a high Christology, he's the one who made it that way. So the Christian response, there's a loving element. There's a gentle, gracious element, but we don't abandon the truth. And what these parents ought to be doing, if the law in their state allows for that, is helping their child to be whole, not helping their child to be broken. Sorry, I get a little. This is one of these things I get rather intense about.
Sure.
Go ahead.
For at least the way our thinking has been so far on this is, so that's a good point about the names. It seems like in this case with the age of the person we're talking about, this young child, I feel like anything that we would do that would kind of affirm that, affirm this change to them would just cause more confusion. That's why I'm at least at a point where I'm having trouble.
When you say cause more confusion, what change, what direction would cause more confusion to who, to whom? Just to get clarity on this for me.
I guess to be an adult that is going along with this for a small child seems to me to be something that is contributing to what's ultimately a harmful practice.
Would be contributing to the harm, did you say?
Because I think that as a project, it's not a...
I agree with you. I think this is a condition of brokenness that the people who are in this circumstance are aware of, and this causes angst in them. It's called dysphoria, for goodness sake, and for a reason. This creates a kind of an anxiety and angst, and this anxiety and angst results in people with this problem having a radically higher incidence of suicide and attempted suicide. Okay, and going along with it and saying, "Oh, this is great," that doesn't change it at all. So I know that people are claiming, well, it's because of folks like us who won't go along with it that they commit suicide. That's not why. I just don't believe that for a second. But so in this case, I agree that we ought not be required socially to comply with all of these wishes and act as if something is just fine when we don't believe it is just fine. Now, if the parents want to raise their child like this, this is their business to do. And if we love the parents and are close with them, we can give our counsel and suggest this is not something that's biblically sound and it's not psychologically sound. And by the way, you don't need to have a PhD in psychology to tell you that. This is obviously not psychologically sound. And when PhDs tell you otherwise, they're flat out wrong. And the reason that they're wrong is because they've been politicized. They haven't always thought this way. It's only when the pressure came from the political left that they began changing their views, not because of good science or psychology, but because of political pressure. What's common sensible is usually the right perspective. And there are only two genders, and the genders are determined by what your body says. And if your mind is out of sync with that, then there's brokenness. And the thing that's broken is not the body, but the mind. And so that should receive some attention. Now, in the state of California, let's say you're in Sacramento, so maybe your friend is in the state of California. It is illegal to get help for that child. But it doesn't, but it doesn't mean that you can't resist. You don't have to give – the law doesn't say you have to treat this girl like a boy. It just means you can't get professional help with the gender dysphoric circumstances. And to me, that's criminal. It's absolutely a criminal abuse of the law. But in any event, that's the way it is. So I think it's perfectly sound for you to speak to the parents – and say, this is a terrible situation, and I'm sympathetic with you. But by encouraging your daughter, you're not helping her. Now, the decision is up to you. But as a brother in Christ, this is my recommendation. You know, this is the counsel. I mean, this is my encouragement to you. If they balk, well, this isn't – God's way is all about love. Well, you're not loving your daughter if you're helping her to stay broken. That's would be my response. But
and consequently, you would not met with much resistance.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I said I suggested that I, I thought it was actually unloving to promote this, and that was met with a lot of resistance and offended.
God bless you, Matt. It's a hard situation to be stuck in. I just acknowledge it entirely. I'm sympathetic to the circumstance you find yourself in here. This is a circumstance that's going to become harder and harder for Christians. And the reason is to follow Christ is going to be means that you will be accused of being unkind, insensitive, and unloving, okay? Mm-hmm. When in fact, God's way is the thing that's most loving. And I think with friends, we have to handle this with gentleness, but at the same time, I think with clarity. And so that you told them that this is not good for your daughter, if that bothers them, I'm sorry. I think that was faithfulness to them. Proverbs says this, faithful are the wounds of a friend. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. And common sense dictates this in the circumstance. This child has a female body. Is that right? Yes. This child, I'm kind of role playing with like if I were talking to your friends. And your child has a belief that is inconsistent with that. So in their mind, they believe they're male, and their body says they are female. That's the definition of brokenness. Does that sound like health to you, Dad, Mom? Does it sound like a healthy circumstance? No. Okay, so something is wrong. Which part is wrong? Is the body wrong, or is the mind wrong? I mean, that's a fair question, and the answer is so obvious. There's nothing wrong with the body. In fact, one of the guys who used to, I can't think of their names right now, but in New York, who used to pioneer, what was a pioneer in this kind of surgery, refused to do it anymore. It famously refused to do it anymore. Alan Schliemann could tell you the name. Maybe Amy knows it. And I'll get feedback in a bit.
At Johns Hopkins, I believe.
At Johns Hopkins. Exactly.
Doctor.
And here's what he said. I am mutilating perfectly good bodies. And I am not helping the people's minds at all. Because after their bodies have been mutilated, and that's what it is, these sex change operations, they are still just as unhappy as they were before. So it doesn't solve the problem. Because that's not where the problem is. It's not in the body. It's in the mind. So, it's a terrible gender dysphoria, genuine, deep-seated, early onset gender dysphoria is a terrible problem and virtually intractable. It's very, very hard to deal with this and get restored.
If I could say one last thing. In this case, because of the girl's age, it's kind of, to me, it's a question of if she actually has dysphoria or if it's more of a, like, she enjoys, like, being with her dad or playing. She is very active and likes to do what would be maybe construed as boy things, but
like a tomboy.
To me, when they, let us know what they were doing, it was like, well, it was really getting, it was a surprise,
I think that, look, when there are girls that are like tomboys, and some boys, they're a little more effeminate, but this doesn't define them necessarily in terms of their gender. These are just characteristics, but we are in an atmosphere now where that's precisely what's happening. There is political pressure to redefine them now as gender dysphoric. And even in high schoolers, they get into adolescence. There's not been any problem up till then. And then they start having the standard adolescent kinds of concerns. And so it's suggested to them that the things you're dealing with is gender dysphoria. This is called rapid onset gender dysphoria. And it's just a fad. It's a social contagion. It's like cutting. It's like, oh, well, everybody's doing it. When it turns out there's very few people that are actually, in fact, gender dysphoric. But in any case, it's not helpful. It's not a good thing. And so the culture is doing something and encouraging something destructive to the human condition. And by the way, if we just step back spiritually, and this is something for your friends, if you are able to have a conversation with them who say they're Christians, if you step back and you say God has created a certain order, we can read about it in Genesis 1, 2, and 3, or 1 and 2, and Jesus quotes that order in Matthew 19 as being the God-ordained order. Male and female, he created them, and be fruitful, multiply. And that's how humans multiply, male and female. That's the way that works. It's all straightforward. It's binary sexuality is God's plan, okay? And it has to do with the dignity of being human. But who has an interest in upsetting the entire apple cart and taking God's plan and turning it inside out? Well, this is the devil's interest of destroying the good things of God and saying the good things are bad and the bad things are good. And so I do see a spiritual element in the culture here. Not so much like individuals are bad people who have been taken in by that. They've been naive and well-meaning, but they have not been biblically faithful when they are taken in by this stuff, as this particular couple, married couple, seems to have been taken in. So I would hold your ground. It sounds like you've already expressed yourself to them. And the only other thing that I would, if I were in your shoes and you continue in relationship, that if you turn out referring in the third person to the little girl with female pronouns and the parents object, this is where I think it's fair to you to say you have the liberty to raise your child the way you think is best. I have the liberty to use the language that I think is true and honest, particularly when I'm not doing it in a way that's going to hurt your daughter's feelings. They're grown-ups. If they got their feelings hurt, well, oh, please. please. You know, this is where grown-ups should be, act like grown-ups and not like children. But a lot – and I don't know the circumstances with your friends, but I'm just saying – a lot of times it's like, oh, I can't take that. That offends me. That bothers me. So you're obliged as a grown-up to act in all the ways that I as a grown-up want you to act so I don't feel put out in some way. Well, that's just ridiculous. So
I was sent an article about all of the harm done when you misgender someone, but that seemed to be the position they were taking for their whole family, that if you were speaking to one of them and you did that, you were committing that awful offense toward any of them.
So yeah,
it's been difficult.
Yeah, it's that's, well, okay, there you go. To me, this is just, this is self-centered abusiveness. If you are willing to, in a certain sense, to go along for the sake of the feelings of the five-year-old with using the name that that five-year-old desires to use that may seem obviously male, even though she's a girl, you should not be required in other conversations to use the gender. The respect now should go the other direction. And this is the way grown-ups are supposed to be, but so many people do not act like grown-ups when it comes to this kind of thing. This approach that they're taking, and I just wrote these things down, and I just got 30 seconds to say it. They are not sound. They are not true. They are not healthy. And they are not ultimately good for their daughter. They are not sound, they are not true, they are not healthy, and they are not ultimately good for their daughter. Now, they get to make the choices about their daughter, but you get to make the choices about the language you use. That's on your side. All right?
Well, thank you so much for your time, Greg. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Matt, and I appreciate your call. I'm going to let you go here because we're at the top of the hour, and man, this is a hard one, and it will continue to be hard because it's not going to get any easier. But just keep in mind, Jesus, full of grace and truth, and try, by the grace of God in your life, try to find a balance when dealing with these kinds of issues. Greg Kokel here for Stand to Reason. You give him heaven. Bye-bye now.